From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Claire Strimple with a news update. President Joe Biden signed the Democrats' tax and climate package, known as the Inflation Reduction Act, into law this week. Among the law's key provisions are a $7,500 tax credit for new electric vehicles, but only if the cobalt, graphite, and other materials in the EV's batteries come from domestic or friendly sources. And as KRBD's Eric Stone reports, that provision and others in the bill could spur mine development in Alaska.
The Inflation Reduction Act offers $7,500 tax credits for people who buy new electric vehicles. But as Patty Ryan of the Atlantic Council's Global Energy Center explains, there's a pretty big catch.
There are about zero cars on the U.S. market today that could potentially qualify for these credits.
That's because starting in 2024, 40% of the metals used in electric vehicle battery production, including cobalt, manganese, nickel, lithium, and graphite, have to either be extracted or processed in the U.S. or a friendly country to qualify for the credit. That figure moves to 80% by 2027. And none can come from so-called foreign entities of concern. That's diplomat ease for China and Russia.
So essentially, the supply chain implications are the real story.
Most of the lithium used in the lithium-ion batteries that go into EVs comes from Australia and Chile, says economist Brett Watson at the University of Alaska Anchorage's Institute of Social and Economic Research.
So those will qualify under the tax credit provisions, which require sourcing materials from nations that have a free trade agreement with the United States, which both of those nations do.
But that's not the case for some of the other minerals used in batteries.
Cobalt, on the other hand, is mostly sourced from the Democratic Republic of the Congo.
The U.S. doesn't have a free trade agreement with the Congo, and that means EV manufacturers will have to source their cobalt elsewhere, maybe from recycling, or maybe from Alaska.
Cobalt is being prospected right now from the Ambler District.
That's a mining prospect in northwest Alaska. Whether it'll turn into a mine is far from a sure bet. The project has been mired in controversy for years. But the company hoping to develop the Ambler Mining District sees the Inflation Reduction Act as an encouraging sign, and not just because of the tax credits for cobalt. Ambler Metals President and CEO Ramsey Fawaz says the Inflation Reduction Act's tax credits for advanced manufacturing are more important to his project in the short term.
And what it boils down to is the companies that are in mining and they can write off 10% of the cost of their operations if they produce one single critical mineral.
There's a long list of minerals that qualify, from aluminum to zinc.
Our first project will be called the Arctic Project, and once we make a decision to invest and start construction, the mine will operate and mainly produce copper and zinc and other metals sometime in the late 20s.
Cobalt production from the so-called bornite deposit would start much later. But will the Inflation Reduction Act's tax credits be enough to move the needle towards actually getting a mine built?
It's a complex question, of course, because it does help for sure, but there are so many factors in realizing a project like ours.
Like, for example, whether a planned 200-plus-mile road to the mining district will move forward. The state's investment agency has poured millions into efforts to build the road, but the project stalled in February after the Biden administration said an environmental analysis of the road was flawed. The push for more domestic minerals to support green technology could have far-reaching effects all over the state. Watson, the economist, points to a prospect called Graphite One outside Nome as another potential beneficiary of the Inflation Reduction Act's electric vehicle tax credit. And in Southeast, he says the advanced manufacturing credit could make development of a rare earth mine on Prince of Wales Island and a processing facility planned for the Ketchikan area an easier sell.
You could imagine that facility in Ketchikan applying for that advanced manufacturing tax credit. So there's something in the bill potentially for the Ketchikan Boken Ridge facility as well.
But Watson says what would truly move the needle is a bill that would reform the sometimes decades-long permitting process to get the mines built. That's reportedly part of the deal that created the Inflation Reduction Act, but no bill has been filed in Congress yet. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
A landslide warning system developed in Sitka is now available to the public as an online app, and work is underway to export the project to other communities in southeast Alaska. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Lisa Bush is the director of the Sitka Sound Science Center, which spearheaded the project. Bush is a 35-year resident of Sitka, and landslides were not on her radar until a very bad day 7 years ago.
So this project got started in 2015 when we had a deadly landslide that killed our friends and family. And I can say that I've been here 35 years and just never thought about landslides until then as a big worry. Mostly we worried about tsunamis. And all of a sudden, people had lots of concerns and lots of questions.
What emerged from that disaster on August 18th, 2015, was an interdisciplinary research program funded by a $2 million grant from the National Science Foundation. Partners ranged from the RAND Corporation, which did social science, to the U.S. Geological Survey and the National Weather Service, which collected hard data, to the Sitka Tribe of Alaska, which gathered oral histories. In all, there were 30 scientists and university researchers on the team. Bush said the final product had to serve a unique purpose, to give people enough information on if and when to act.
People said to us, and I think this is very Alaskan, they wanted to make their own decisions. They wanted a digital dashboard that where they could go and look at the risk and then make their own choices about if they should evacuate.
This is intentionally different from the tsunami warning system, which issues loud and insistent orders to evacuate and is more or less binary. A big earthquake occurs and a tsunami is either there or it's not. Landslides are the result of factors that are cumulative, in particular, how much rain has fallen or is expected to fall in a 3-hour period. And unlike tsunamis, the landslide risk is not shared equally across town.
We looked at where are the more landslide-prone areas and where part of Sitka is really most prone to landslides. And by the way, it's not the whole town. It's about 10% of our community. So when the landslides first happened, everybody said, well, we're all in a landslide zone. Well, that's not true. About 10% of homes are in landslide areas.
The Sitka Landslide Warning App is a web app which opens in a web browser. It shows low, medium, and high risk and generates a curve based on current conditions plus the forecast to anticipate risk up to 3 days into the future. It's got recommendations on how to evaluate the information based on where you live and what you should do if you decide to leave your home. The app is still being fine-tuned. Emergency planners hope to create messaging to help residents manage landslide risk moving forward.
What the emergency response people would like is for you to find a buddy system. So my house maybe is close to the water, and so I'm more prone to being hit by tsunamis. And my friend's house is someplace else where I can go when there's a tsunami warning. And then when there's a landslide warning, my friend can come down to my house and be in my safe house. And so we're saying, you know, uphill for tsunamis, downhill for a landslide.
Sitka is just the beginning for what Bush hopes becomes a regional landslide warning system. Work is already in progress to create similar warning systems in Hoonah, Skagway, Klukwan, Craig, Kasan, and Yakutat. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Alaska's highest court said fisheries managers did not have to manage the Cook Inlet set net fishery to national standards, and that they didn't violate any regulations when they closed the fishery early. That opinion from the Alaska Supreme Court, published Friday, is the latest legal blow to the 440 or so east side permit holders who've seen their fishery close early for the last 4 summers due to paired restrictions with the king salmon sport fishery. And after the closure in 2019, set netters represented by the Cook Inlet Fishermen's Fund sued the state in hopes the court would order managers to rework that management plan and others. It alleged restrictions the state had placed on commercial fishermen were unscientific and arbitrary and flew in the face of national standards. The Kenai Court said because there was no federal management plan for the Cook Inlet fisheries at that time, the state was not bound by those standards. And it said the state's Board of Fish and Department of Fish and Game had the discretion to write and enforce their own rules. The Supreme Court doubled down on that opinion last week. A suspect connected to an Amber Alert sent out to Alaskans on Wednesday night has been arrested. Alaska State Troopers say they were searching for 51-year-old Fairbanks resident Stephen Narone for a felony probation violation on Wednesday. Investigators later connected Narone to the disappearance of 15-year-old Alexis Bain, who'd last been seen in Fairbanks Sunday, August 14th. Troopers arrested Narone Thursday morning. They're still investigating the incident surrounding Bain's disappearance, and officials say more charges are likely to come. Narone was placed into custody at Wildwood Correctional Center in Kenai. It's sunny in Juneau with more sunshine to come this weekend, but we may see fog tomorrow.